Still rocking and rolling right here on the Team 980. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app as well. Lynnell Willingham taking you up to 1 p.m. Chris Russell will follow things up. Right now we go out to the guest hotline for the second time this show is where we will continue our conversation surrounding Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin. We're joined by the man of the hour. We've been talking about y'all hour, big fella. Trevor Sikkema, better known as Tampa Bay Trey, joining the program. Lead draft analyst for PFF. Make sure you check out him and my guy Connor Rogers for the NFL Stock Exchange show. You can check that out on YouTube. Just a handsome duo, if I might say, myself, Trevor. I appreciate you giving us some time, man. I feel like it's been forever.
I know. I appreciate you having me back on, man. I know when you texted me to come on the show, I was like, oh, man, I haven't popped on with Lynnell in a little while. So this would be a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me.
Yes, indeed, man. I always love talking to you during this time of year because I call it list season, Trevor. Everyone's putting out their lists ahead of 2025. Last year, I believe PFF had Terry McLaurin ranked that as the 16th best wide receiver in the NFL. This year, he jumps all the way up to 10. Trevor, I want you to explain the first line of this blurb. McLaurin is the toughest player to rank on this list. Why is your evaluation of Terry oftentimes so difficult?
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, one, ranking wide receivers in the NFL, especially when you were in, I would say, like tier one, tier two, tier three, really the top 20 wide receivers, it's very difficult. Like the it's razor thin margins for a lot of these guys. And then especially once you get outside of, I would say, the top eight, like a lot of it's kind of preference and style. And so I think that when you look at a guy like McLaurin, he suffers from being really good at everything, but maybe not having that like Hollywood type of trait. Right? Like think of Drake London or Mike Evans,
right?
Or even T. Higgins, right? Like these when you think of these wide receivers, you think of that ability to be above the rim, the red zone, the contested catching, their work when it's scoring touchdowns, when space is at a premium. It's easy to envision that. Or if you think of guys like, you know, let's say Jalen Waddle, right? You automatically think of, okay, the speed, the explosiveness, world-class speed. When you think of Terry McLaurin, he's just a damn good wide receiver. But then it's like, okay, well, what's his calling card? You know, like, where am I? Why am I putting him exactly above a T. Higgins or a Jalen Waddle or a Devontae Smith or something? And so sometimes Terry suffers actually from being really good at everything, which is a funny way to go about it. And ultimately, I landed with him at number 10 on my rankings. And I'll be honest, I had him sort of all over the place, like within that range, anywhere from, I think I considered him like 9 to 15. I feel like he could have gone anywhere. But the more that I looked at it, the rest of that blurb as you read it, you know, you talk about DK Metcalf or Mike Evans or Drake London and all these guys who have great contested catch ability. Terry McLaurin has the most contested catches of any receiver since 2020.
Yeah.
And I looked that up as I was doing research, and I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to fault him for that, certainly. And then last year, we got to see what he was like with a true franchise quarterback throwing him the football. And I just feel as though we got to see more of the best of Terry McLaurin throughout the entire year because of his connection with Jaden Daniels. And a metric that we have at PFF that it's not quite PFF exclusive, but we're one of the only places that's really doing it publicly, is that wins above average metric that we have. And really, in a three-year sample size, which is something I tried to do for this exercise, I was ranking a lot of these wide receivers. You know, I'm looking at one-year sample size. You know, what have you done for me lately last year? But then I also like to do the three-year sample size as well. Terry McLaurin, seventh in the NFL amongst wide receivers for wins above replace, for wins above average. So it just it showcases that this is a guy that has the argument to be called a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, and obviously having him at number 10, I've got him right there on the edge of that.
So our friends at the 33rd team actually credited him with the most yards via the go route last year, 384. So when we talk about like that special trait in him, maybe not just having one thing that sticks out, I think it that stat kind of speaks to it perfectly. He's great at contested catches. He also could take the top off of a defense. You mentioned him and Jaden Daniels this past year, getting to pair up with each other and helping Washington's offense be one of the more explosive ones in all of the NFL. How do you think the additions of Jalen Lane and Deebo Samuel impact Terry McLaurin from a target standpoint? And do you still think, you know, he will have the same statistical or similar statistical output as last year?
Well, volume might go down a little bit naturally, but I will tell you that it's sort of the answer that I think everybody would give is I think the efficiency only goes up, right? Yeah. I think that you have the ability to put him in a lot of really good situations. I like Jalen Lane and Deebo Samuel specifically because it pairs very well to what you just said there. I think that people think that Jalen Lane, oh, look at this guy, you know, he runs super fast. He's going to be able to take the top off the defense himself. They'll send him deep on vertical routes, and they will do that with him. But if you watch his film at Virginia Tech last year, Virginia Tech was trying to get the ball in his hands in any way.
Yeah.
And that meant, you know, screens, slants, but even wide receiver reverses. You know, they were giving this guy the ball behind the line of scrimmage. And so you think about Deebo Samuel and when he was at his best back in 2021 being utilized as a wide receiver and also a running back at times with what he could do out of the backfield as a ball carrier. You've now got two guys that you lean on pretty heavily in that area. And I think that that just really frees up Terry to be more of that intermediate and deep wide receiver on the team. As the defenses have to creep up, you know, you're hoping that, you know, they're going to have to creep up a little bit to guard Deebo Samuel and Jalen Lane. That's when Terry McLaurin can really help you and kill the other team deep down the field. And, you know, he is fast, right?
Yes.
I don't want to take anything away from Terry McLaurin, but it's funny. It's a little bit less explosive. It's a little bit more smooth. And then I think that the calling card for him deep down the field is that deep ball tracking and that separation that he creates right as the ball is coming in. It's so subtle. It's so smooth. It's so savvy. And again, the way that Terry McLaurin wins isn't always Hollywood. It's not always the way that people get to point to and say, like, yes, elite, dominant here. But when you put all the pieces together, you get a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, I think. And I think that, again, just having Jaden Daniels and allowing him to showcase that more with that franchise quarterback throwing him the football, it just became too obvious to where I said, you know what, we've got to bring it. We've got to move. Too many years now we have said, well, if McLaurin had a great receiver, he did.
Yeah.
And he showcased us that he was able to do all of this at an even higher level with a great quarterback throwing in the football. And with that, I think you have to move him up those rankings.
And Trevor, you know how we are here locally in D.C. I credit us as one of the smarter fan bases in the NFL. People were ready to riot. This offense was scoring 30-plus points a game early in the season, Trevor, and Terry wasn't getting the ball. People were ready to riot about it. Cliff did a nice job moving him around. I know it was something that you all wrote about last year. I'm excited to see how he evolves. He was not at the OTA session the other day. My sources internally in D.C. say it's not a big deal. One could think it's because of the contract that is looming for him. Right now, his $22.7 million AAV ranks 16th in the National Football League. Where do you think he slots when he puts pen to paper on this new deal? And then I guess a two-parter for you. Should there be some hesitancy with Washington to give him the bag, so to speak, because this is his age 30 season coming up?
Yeah, I without having the list right in front of me, I would say that I think he'll land somewhere between the fifth and eighth highest paid wide receiver in the NFL when he gets this new contract. Like I think
it's, real quick, Trevor, fifth AJ Brown at $32 million, eighth Tyreek Hill at 30. So
yes. Okay. So I think it will be somewhere like within that range. And I think there's probably, now that you say those names, I think there's, and their AAV, I think there's probably a couple of players that really are also within that 30 range who might be, you know, like 9th, 10th, 11th. So I think it'll be somewhere within there, but I think they're going to want to do well by McLaurin, who is really, from all accounts, certainly from this side of things, has been a leader for them throughout some years that were disappointing, certainly on the offensive side of the football. And I think that they will want to reward him. It feels like the ownership and just the culture that is the Washington Commanders now are going to want to do that. And so I think that he would land somewhere between that fifth to eighth highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. And honestly, I wouldn't have hesitancy. And the reason why is because right now you have the most valuable thing in all of sports. And that is a franchise caliber quarterback who is playing on a rookie contract, even with him getting drafted number two overall, because you think about it, Jaden's going into his second year of his rookie contract. That rookie contract goes at least 4 years, likely that fifth year option. But of course, I think Washington will probably do the right thing and will probably get ahead of that once they get to that fourth year. If McLaurin's got, he's got one more year on his deal, I assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's got one more deal, like year on, or one more year on his current deal. If you sign him to a 3-year extension,
right? That's the number.
That then, that then lines up the timeline with when you would then have to pay Jaden Daniels. And at that point, Terry McLaurin is, you know, he's going to be 33, 34, whatever it is. And you're probably looking at shifting who your top wide receiver option is there anyway. Right. So I think that all parts of this line up for the fact that Terry's going to get a new deal. It's going to be a 2-3 year extension, something like that. They're going to pay him to get him back into the top eight of wide receivers paid per year. And I think that it just lines up with exactly where this team is in their winning window, very clearly getting to that NFC championship game last year.
So DK Metcalf slotted to make $33 million annually on the new deal that he signed in Pittsburgh. I would think Terry, same draft class as DK, if I'm not mistaken, will want to pass that number. So I was looking, Trevor, kind of at 3 years, $34 million per. That would make it 3 years, $102 million. So it seems like the guarantees obviously will impact that. But I think we're on the same page here. What do you say to some of the Terry McLaurin detractors, though, Trevor? Because, you know, we follow this thing closely here in D.C. You look at that Atlanta Falcons overtime game where Jaden Daniels strapped the team to his back. Terry McLaurin going up against A.J. Terrell, one of the top corners, 7 targets, just 1 reception. You go back to that first meeting against Philadelphia on Thursday Night Football, going up against Quinion Mitchell, just 1 catch, 2 targets. What are the limitations of his game, and how much does that factor in when you're determining whether or not to give him the deal or not?
Yeah, look, I think it's a situation where, like, you're going to continue to see growth from him. I really do, like, especially in those single coverage situations.
Yeah.
And I think that will happen with established quarterback play, to be honest with you, like good quarterback play. Like, I think right. that the single coverage numbers will get better for him even this upcoming season. And look, you know, there are some these great cornerbacks, they get paid a lot of money too. You know, I know you obviously pay your top wide receiver to win those matchups more often than not, but I would argue that I think that Terry McLaurin wins those options more often than not. And the thing is that sometimes guys aren't necessarily these single coverage dominators, and I think sometimes you want them to be, but hey, sometimes the defense just has a really good game plan for you, and I think that that's the whole reason why you trade for a Deebo Samuel, why you go get a Jalen Lane, is because it's not as much like, oh, we've got to go get somebody to help Terry because he can't dominate himself. No, like you want to be able to have a good pass game ecosystem, right? Jamar Chase exists, but the Bengals still paid T. Higgins, right?
Right.
A.J. Brown still exists, but you still got Devontae Smith right there. Puka Nacua is phenomenal, but you still went and you signed Devontae Adams. Like, I just think that what I would say to the detractors and people who would bring that up is just like, wait till this year, man. I think that this year we're going to see a really efficient, really good Terry McLaurin, because Cliff Kingsbury is going to have the opportunity to put him in a lot of really advantageous situations, especially if Deebo looks anything close to that 2021 version of Deebo Samuel, now that he's in a new system, now that he's hopefully healthy, and he's not as frustrated like he clearly was last year in San Francisco. And so that's sort of what I would say to him, is that, man, there's a lot of numbers that point to him being arguably a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, and I think those numbers only get stronger this upcoming season.
A couple of more moments with our pal Trevor Sikkema, the lead draft analyst for PFF, also the co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange podcast, with Connor Rogers. You can check that out on YouTube and wherever you download your podcast. I know you've been high on the burgundy and gold this offseason, my friend. I've seen a lot of the work that you've done on Washington, and you liking the additions that they have made. If you're making a short list of Super Bowl contenders, teams that are in that conversation, how firmly entrenched is Washington there?
Has to be, right? I mean, you look at what they did last year in their first year of a lot of those guys coming together. Now, I will say this, it gets harder to repeat success the longer you do it. So it will certainly take the next step for Jaden Daniels. It will take the next step specifically for Cliff Kingsbury, right? Because there are a lot of times where Kingsbury has had success in this league or college football or whatever it is, and then he kind of gets figured out a little bit here. So he absolutely has to evolve. But you look at this roster, it's still a really great roster. I like the additions that they have made. I am a big Dan Quinn guy, somebody who I think can get the most out of his players. The players absolutely love him. I think that we saw that even in the last couple of years that he was struggling with the Atlanta Falcons. Those players still played for him at all times. And so whatever these guys have in the tank, I think they're going to give it to this team and to this coaching staff. And so you have to absolutely have Washington in that category, because they were one game away from it last year. So I think that this is a team that got better. I am a little bit worried about their front seven. I think a lot of people are.
Yeah.
Like, if there's an area that I'm really concerned with, it's that, as well as certainly the secondary and how it's going to shape out, right? How good is Marshawn Lattimore, and how available is he going to be for them this season? How much can they get out of that second-round pick in Trey Amos, who I was a big fan of, but we'll see. It's tough to play corner as a rookie in the NFL, and then what are you doing with Mike Sanders still? Is he playing more in the slot? Are you keeping him to the outside? What are you doing with the rest of that cornerback group? So I actually think that it's going to continue to be fireworks for them on the offensive side of the ball, but you know, can that defense be a little bit more stout, really take that next step and maybe even get them into the Super Bowl this year?
They're going to have to, going up against a much more difficult set of offenses in 2025. You brought up the front seven. Real quick, your thoughts on some of their immediate replacements, Trevor, because this is where some of the detractors go and point. You swapped out John Allen for Javon Kinlaw. You swapped out Jeremy Chinn for Will Harris. I think anybody with good football eyes would tell you they downgraded at both of those two spots. How much of an impact do you expect that to play? I think Marshawn, like you mentioned, is the linchpin of the defense.
Right.
If he plays well, everything changes.
Right. I think that they need a huge year from Johnny Newton, who is somebody that I absolutely loved when he was fully healthy at Illinois. But, like, he's got to take that next step. I mean, Kinlaw really struggled with the 49ers. He struggled with the Jets. I guess I can sort of, like, understand the familiarity of him coming over and playing for a familiar Commander system. But I just I'm a little bit wary of how much money they gave him. I like the Dietrich Wise addition, but
I think
he's more of like a rotational depth guy. Dorrance Armstrong, I guess you're leaning on him. I mean, he's kind of got to be your sack guy this year, and he's got to take that next step as well. But to me, a lot of it revolves around Johnny Newton, because if Newton is good, then all of a sudden you got him and Daron Payne in the middle. Armstrong is at least solid as one of your edge rushers. Dietrich Wise, I think, could be solid and very versatile for you as well. That, to me, could be a defensive line that is good enough. But if Newton doesn't take that next step, now you start getting a little bit worried, because now you got to put a little bit too much on the plate of guys who you might not be ready for.
For sure. Appreciate your time, as always, my friend. Keep up the good work. We will talk soon, my man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Anytime.
That is Tampa Bay Trey, a.k.a. Trevor Sikkema. Give him a follow on all social media platforms, at Tampa Bay Trey. Doesn't get much better than talking to Trevor Sikkema when it comes to the burgundy and gold. He was pretty savage about the defense, don't you think? Not a fan of the Javon Kinlaw signing. Really thinks Johnny Newton's going to have a big year. We had a lot to chew on between now and the start of training camp, but if that conversation didn't do it, we're getting warmed up, man. We're right there, right getting close to crossing the finish line when it comes to the NFL season getting kicked off. As I mentioned, next week, the first time that the entire team is going to be made available on the practice field to the media. Can't wait for that to happen. We'll take a quick time out when we come back. One final segment before we hand things over to Chris Russell.
All right, last night, the Nats, they walk off the Atlanta Braves. They win by a score of 8-7. Robert Hassel becomes the first Nat to notch two hits and one stolen base in the Nationals' debut. The Nats extend their win streak to 5 games. The Panthers, they wax the Hurricanes 5-0 in the series to take a 2-0 lead. The Thunder, they beat the Timberwolves 118-103. The 2025 MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, put up 38 points, 3 rebounds, and 8 assists. They jump out to a 2-0 lead in the series as well. Caitlin Clark, her 140-game streak of scoring at least one three-pointer has come to a close. The Fever still able to pull out the win 81-76. And the Colorado Rockies, they are off to the worst 50-game start in MLB history. After they are swept by the Philadelphia Phillies, they sit at 8-42. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10-1 and Craig Hoffman from 4-7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.